I think as in many children, we always remember as children what the Fokker Tripod looks like, and I built little models when I was a child. And then I was really doing a lot of parachuting, so I was in planes a lot. And always I find planes quite scary, because when you parachute jump, you really, when you come to the height of about 300 meters, it's quite nice. You relax a little bit, because when the plane fails, you can always make an emergency jump. I think, if I'm really honest to myself, the reason why I learned flying and why I did my private pilot license, because I wanted to build and fly the Fokker triplane, because I do remember that I've actually bought the rights to build the plane before I passed my private pilot test. And that was, I was never really admitting it to myself, but I think that's where I was coming from. I had to see that there are English pilots building the German triplane, and that encouraged me to build one as well. For example, if I would have been here on my own, I would not have done it. But I've seen there are two or three other English pilots building a German plane, a German triplane, the most iconic plane I think there is. That showed me that there's a fascination about that, which is not wrong. And that's why I think this is fantastic to do, because I always wanted to do one, and I found it so, I wouldn't say easy, but so accommodating that here in England, people have got a long tradition of building their own aircraft, and you are given the facility to go along. For example, in Germany, it would be so difficult to build your own triplane without many, many problems. And I was so fascinated by it. That's why I think it's not a dream. I can make it come true. If you decide to build it, you have to first get plans. And the most famous person who drew nice plans up or drawings is Ron Sands from America, who's not with us anymore, but his son, Ron Sands is also his name, he sells them. So what you do, you actually contact America and buy the plans. You have to sign that you're not going to build more than one. That's an American legal issue. But then you buy these plans, and they're really good. They're really big drawings of A1 size, or A0 even, very detailed, and they give you good ideas and tell you exactly how to build a plane, what you need. I mean, they're also, of course, in American, that's why they're quite good, just to they measure in inches, which is then easier to use here in England. And these plans are fantastic. I mean, I've got certain skills, as you know, you just do certain things like at home, refurbishing, but I always was quite keen just to do some work with my hands, with my casting, for example. And then you ask people, can you show me how to do this? Or you just read about it, and suddenly you get all these skills you just didn't have before. And of course, with my surgical skills I've got as well, they're just that helps a great amount. So, and then suddenly you just develop all these skills, and you can just build your own planes. This is the wing. I've just completed the middle wing. You can see it's all the wood structures here. And the middle part, the most important part, is the spar. There's a picture when Tony Fokker had all these people standing on the spar to show how strong it is. So the spar goes all the way from one end to the next, so it's not interrupted. The spar is more, is thicker in the middle, because it needs to carry more weight, and the more it gets to the end, the thinner it is. So you can see all these structures are basically attached to the spar. Every rib, for example, is then put in one by one along the spar, and then fixed in a certain position. What you also can see, the leading edge here, is this where the wind meets the wing. This is quite thin plywood, about 1.5 millimeter. And you can see plywood usually is quite straight, but this is now almost 180 degrees bent. So this was quite a challenge for me to shape that plywood into the shape it needs to be. And to do that, you have to take a plywood sheet, cut it into the correct size, and then you have to wet it. You have to leave it in the water for almost a day, so it really soaks all the water up. And then once the next day, when it's all soaked up, you take the spar and fold it round the wing and fix it in place, so it's actually just in the way it should be. And then you leave it for about a day or two to dry. And then afterwards, quite magically, when you take all the straps off,
the plywood then stays in the shape you have created it. So it's very interesting how they even did this in the First World War. They have done this exactly the same way. And I find it absolutely amazing how nicely the plywood stays in that shape, because we know all the wings were all done with wood. They didn't use any metal, so all this is wood. Because of that, this was a very vulnerable structure in the First World War. I need to turn my hand around.
Okay, I've got it. Yes, the ribs, there are so many when you look at the wings, because they're all more or less shaped very similarly. So you have to then make a template, and you put the template on the plywood and cut it out, and you have to do it again and again and again, because you've got so many ribs to do. So that probably took me about 6 months just to cut the wood out.
This rib is for the lower wing I want to do, and as you can see, there are holes in the ribs because they were not daft in the First World War. They wanted to save weight, but the holes, they do not make the wings any weaker. So I think it's a very clever construction.
Well, you do enjoy it. There are episodes when you've got so much work and you think, oh gosh, another rib, another 30 ribs to do, another cut here. But I think overall, the more and more you do, you really start to enjoy it. It's just because you can't really switch off. When you do these things, you always have to remember, for example, when I work and I come home at 6 o'clock, 6:30, I think, oh, you know, what about the wings? What about this part? What about that part? So you go back in the garage and do things. You always have to think about this. You have to plan ahead. If you don't, you will never finish it.
So keep coming down.
Keep coming down.
Yeah, you're all right, you've cleared the pain.
A lot of welds. So each one of those welds has to be individually inspected to make sure that it's a sound weld, that there are no cracks or corrosion in any of the welds. What we try and avoid is people killing themselves. And so it's very important that an aircraft has been thoroughly inspected during the build process to make sure that the right materials have been used, that it's been assembled correctly, and that at the end of the day, the aircraft stands a good chance of actually flying. In this particular case, some of the work done on the back of the airplane was done by a specialist welding firm. And when we measured the rudder, we found that it was 2 inches smaller than it should be. So that had to be corrected, which it was, but it's an example of why it's important to check the actual finished aircraft against the drawings to make sure it conforms.
I was building the plane, and over the years my son suddenly said, well, there's actually a way you can buy the title Baron, which is from Zealand, which is out of the English territory, and they've got the royal family. So I thought, for fun and for my aircraft, I buy the title Baron or Baron. So I'm actually officially, my title is Baron Peter von Brüggemann, which is nice, but I wouldn't use it for anything else like credit cards. It's just for fun, and it's going to be on my plane. So I'm actually, my patients already, they're calling me the Red Baron or the Flying Doctor, because they also see the fun in it.
Because we had to really stop it from falling down on the floor, one of the cotton bands broken off. But I mean, this is quite easy to repair, really. So we need to do some rib stitching. Because of my surgical techniques and things I learned being a surgeon, they can come in very handy using instruments, tying knots, and I've got here, you can probably see it, this is a surgical needle holder. A needle goes in there, and you use the forceps on the other side. And in the surgical world, you, for example, would hold a needle holder not like this. You learn as a surgeon to start with. You hold it in your ring finger. Because when you work like this, you've got always your other three fingers to work with. So the surgical technique, which is very handy. I start on the bottom,
talking about the DR1 and building it, Peter's building one. Fokker contributed to the output of some 45,000 plus aircraft made by Germany in World War One. And the Fokker DR1 was a small portion of that. It numbered 320 aircraft. So it went into production, but for a fairly short period of time. The first ones suffered from structural failure because the top main plane failed. It was then discovered that the adhesive was not good enough, that the linen was not good enough, because a linen will allow ultraviolet rays through, and that's one of the most deadly things for a fabric aircraft. And you can then get mould, you can get saturation, you can get deterioration in the wing structure, and then hence structural failure. All of this has to be considered by somebody rebuilding an aircraft.
Yes, of course, they said Irish linen. There was Irish linen what they've used in those days. You can, of course, use Irish linen, but I'm not sure whether that would be very safe. Now we've got other material like Cessonite, for example, which many of the other aircraft are covered, for example, the Tiger Moth. But there's a very good product I'm using now is Oratex. Oratex is from Germany as well. It's been around for quite a few years now, and it's actually approved by the CAA and the LAA that you can use it to build certain aircraft. So it's very strong. I actually find it, once you use it and you just learn how to use it, it's extremely good to put on and to work with. We've just done rib stitching on the ribs, so now we have to cover the ribs on the stitching, the cotton thread, with pink tape to protect it from the from stress on the outside. So all I do, I just put the baking paper to protect it over it, and just then put my iron on it to attach the Oratex on the rib, and also with heat and with pressure. So with two things, you just allow the adhesive to set. And again, it's quite nice how nicely the Oratex move in the heat. And wrinkles you create, you think, oh, I never get rid of that wrinkle there. But when you apply heat for long enough without burning it, it's going to look very nice.
Here we have a Tiger Moth wing, very similar construction to the Fokker triplane. The basic fabric, Irish linen, had so many problems that the industry has developed over the last 50 years man-made fabrics, and today the integrity of the material is beyond doubt. But I'll show you now, this is Irish linen. And the problem with Irish linen was that initially, if you put it on the structure, it would sag. So there was an introduction of a variety of dopes that tautened the material, and that gave it a measure of protection, but unfortunately never protected it against UV. So there was always an element of deterioration. That is the downfall of Irish linen.
So this is the last wing I have to do. I've done all the other ones. I've done the top one and the lower wing. So this is the middle wing, and I'm now almost at the end of it. So what you can see here, this is how the wing should look like. It's nice and smooth. So this is the what the Oratex looks like originally. You can see I've also done the rib stitching. They just, of course, go all the way to the other side and back. And eventually, when this is all nice and smooth, we're going to have a pink tape, as you can see over there, and on the other side. So I just now want to start putting the heat gun on. So just start over here. After looking too light, let me just apply the heat gun. Now use the thermometer to see what the temperature is. Because if it gets too hot, it will just burn. You can probably see now it starts to get smooth. It's getting nice and smooth.
Yeah, well, there's not much protection from being fired at in these aeroplanes. You've just got a thin linen covering the airframe, so bullets will just go straight through those. There's no armour plating. You've got a fuel tank in front of you, so an incendiary bullet through that and you'd be a flaming wreck. It must have been quite terrifying.
In Germany, when you grew up, like I did, you never really talk about the past, not as such as, for example, here you see all these TV programs and history, my grandfather did this, my grandfather did that. In Germany, you just don't, because you are told that's something you don't talk about. But amongst the family, we do talk about things. I remember that my aunt told me that she says that some of my relatives actually served in the Luftwaffe in the First World War. But that's all we really talked about. We didn't really bring up any details. Even the pictures we used to have, they just suddenly disappeared somewhere. Remember, for example, my grandfather, my mother told me he used to be a lorry driver in the war. And he was captured by the British forces, and he was a prisoner of war in England. My other grandfather, on my father's side, he used to be a dentist.
This, what you can see, is his German medical thesis he did in 1935. And you can see his picture here when he was drafted into the military in 40, and he worked as a dentist at the military hospital in Oslo, in Norway. Unfortunately, he developed appendicitis in Oslo in the military hospital, and he died. It's quite sad, really, but just for me to honor his name, I wanted to have this in my surgery. This is the Oratex, the Oratex cover, and this is called, I think they come in 6 or 7 colors, but this one is called Fokker Red, and you can see why, because Fokker's plane was red, so that's why it's quite distinguished. It's a Fokker Red. There are quite a few triplanes around here in the country. They are not red, because originally there was only one red triplane in the world, which was Manfred's plane. But because I've got some of my relatives were in the Fliegertruppe in the First World War, so I think if anybody's got a really right to have a red plane, I think it should be me, really. So for me, there was never really a question to have a nice, bright red triplane.
Von Richthofen's aircraft was equipped with Spandauer machine guns. I think the technical term would be 0815s for them. Twin machine guns firing around 500 rounds a minute. They were there, bluntly, to kill. To help the army by using that superiority to lift the lid off the enemy's movements through aerial reconnaissance.
And the drawings are also the drawings for the guns, the size, and you can make them. But now we have these fire mechanisms, and that works with oxygen and propane gas. It sounds a bit strange with propane and in the aircraft when you fly, is it safe or not? But it is actually.
This is a replica MG0815 I built, and in it is an LPG gunfire system. In a nutshell, I'm injecting oxygen and propane into a cylinder with a spark plug, and it makes a lot of noise. Can't actually fire anything, but makes the gun simulation noise, which we are using battlefield reenactment and has been used in films since the 1950s. I'm going to put a similar unit into Peter's guns. So obviously this is one gun, but he's going to have two. The gas lines are actually hidden in the ammunition belt. On Peter's aircraft, that won't be necessary because the ammunition belt was actually hidden in the chute anyway. I'm just going to test fire this gun so you can get a little bit of an idea of what it's going to sound like. Although please bear in mind, there's going to be two of them. They're quite often called Spandaus, mainly by the British, because the Spandau arsenal produced the vast majority of them, and they had engraved Spandau on the top. The MG0815 is the infantry version of this weapon. The version that is going into Peter's aircraft is an LMG MG0815, because it's a lightweight version. The jacket you see in front of you on this version is filled with water. Obviously, you don't want that in an aeroplane because of the weight. So what they did, they perforated the jacket so it didn't have any water in it, and relied solely on the air to keep them cool. These were used by the German stormtroopers to assault British trenches. The British version, if you like, of this is the Lewis gun, a much better gun in a lot of respects. About the same weight, but it wasn't belt fed, it was magazine fed. This is a Lewis light machine gun. Again, not very light. It's actually an air-cooled weapon. People see this jacket and assume it's full of water. It isn't. It's actually designed to suck air down from the barrel blast to cool it. That was the theory. Actually, it didn't work. In the Second World War, they discovered if you got rid of all this, it fired just as happily without it. So the poor old British Tobby was wandering around with about 4.5 extra pounds of weight for no reason. If you were in a trench in about 1915, it's very possible you would have actually been strafed by an aircraft. Obviously, you would want to hit back. So the aircraft, of course, is fabric. So you can shoot as many holes in fabric as you like to a certain extent, and it won't knock the aircraft down. So you've got to get the vital bits, the pilot and the engine.
I would like to use the original engine. A rotary engine would have been nice, as they used to in those days, but they are so difficult to get. So in the end, I decided I quite like a really safe engine. If I fly, maybe in the future I will fly to Germany, I really do want a safe engine. So in the end, I bought a new engine, which is basically Superior 360, which is a more or less a clone of the Lycoming 360. It's a brand new engine, it's very reliable, and I'm really happy with it. So this are the cylinders S-Can have created, and which then of course go under the engine part, like them, for example, like that, just like this. But because of the cowling, you can only see three of my cylinders coming out like that. But they're just so much lighter, they don't weigh anything at all. But the finish is absolutely perfect. You can't even see there's a line in the middle. So these cylinders look absolutely like they used to in the First World War.
On a damp, overcast day, the final assembly of Peter's aircraft begins. The convoy is beset by frustration as a thunderstorm delays the departure of the first two wings. The larger and more complex third wing will follow later in the day, if the weather holds. The triplane's wings are relatively robust when fitted to the airframe, but during ground transportation, the fragile fabric and thin wood can be easily damaged. Peter's crew and family lift their precious cargo into the safety of the hangar, as, for the first time, all the pieces required to build a flying example of the Fokker are gathered in one place.
Job's good.
Is that all right?
Well, this propeller is made by Hercules. The company is called Hercules, and they have already made a few propellers for the Fokker triplane, for exactly the same engine I've got, because you've got different engines, and you've got different propellers for different engine sizes. They've done a really good job, and you look at the different layers of wood. So the way they cut it and they glue it together is just a science on its own, and these things are. I think they're absolutely beautiful. Just perfect, just the way it should be. So all we need to do now is just to paint the cowling, and we can take it for a test flight.
His friend Captain Bond is flying his Dreidecker, but Peter's triplane has yet to feel the wind beneath its wings. As a working doctor and surgeon, the autumn months in Britain pile on enormous pressure.
Doctors is very busy, and at the moment we've got winter, even though we haven't got a bad flu epidemic. Still, so much job and so much work to do. I hardly had any time to work on my aircraft. Even though I did a bit, I just now covered all the wings, and they're going to go on soon. You can see I provisionally cut out the Oratex cover for the whole of the fuselage. Just the top, the side, and the bottom is already covered. It's already glued in. And on the other side as well. Well, it's going on for so many years now. You just, you take it step by step. But you can see, I can see the end now. I sometimes sit in my seat there, and sit in front of my guns, and I know it's going to be nice one day, and it's not going to be much longer now. In my mind, already were planned to fly to Germany in September, and I don't know. It's just my imagination, but that would be a fantastic place to fly and show a Fokker triplane.
Despite making good progress with the fuselage, Peter is resigned to the fact that his plane won't fly until the following spring. But that doesn't mean there won't be a triplane in the sky.